Conference Committee to order. Present from the House side for the Conference Committee on Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 149 Finance Amended Senate Court Rule Failed Senate. Let's just go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Crawford.
Here.
Representative Stoltz.
Here, Mr. Senator.
Senator French.
Here.
Senator Bundy.
Here.
Senator Seekins.
Here.
Last we met, we agreed that we couldn't agree on either version, and so we asked for limited powers to consider amendments, and I have seven amendments, I think, all total, that have to be offered. Everybody had a chance to look at them. So my intention is to go ahead and take them in the order as they're written. Thank you all for getting the amendments to us so that we could look them over, see how they fit in. I've got a lot of highlighted stuff here. So with that, I'm going to let Representative Stoltz bring up the first two and explain them. And if it's okay with the committee, since we had some staff do it, helping us make sure that everything fit correctly, if we need to, I'd like to have any one of the staff from any one of the committee members explain, because they do fit into a lot of places in the bill. So if it's okay with the committee, I'll extend that to the every committee member if they have a staff member. Representative Crawford.
Mr. Chairman, the two amendments that I have are actually an amendment to your first amendment. So I can do it either way, bring them up separately or as amendments to the to your amendment, however you choose.
We might as well bring them up as amendments to the amendment when we're doing them. So I think that would probably move things along very well, and we'll be in discussion on that particular amendment. So I thank you for bringing that point up. Mr. Co-Chairman, anything else?
No, sir. Proceed, sir.
All right. So let's go to amendment number one, and Representative Stoltz.
Chairman, I move amendment number one, 24LS0596, batch class DA, Finley Lookup, 32606.
I'll object so that we can go ahead and have the discussion on it.
Mr. Chairman, I'll go through it briefly, and then probably bring staff up to facilitate discussion if there are other questions. It inserts the logbook provisions severely back in the bill. The criteria was based in a large part on the federal law that was passed with the reauthorization of the Patriot Act, trying to create consistency for, am I speaking loud? I'm sorry. I have a tendency not to speak loud, so I'll.
I just happen to be deaf.
It's all the clanging of the iron.
To provide uniformity of laws for both the consumer and the merchants. The purchaser provides federal estate a photo ID, and they sign a form or electronic log, depending on the technology of the vendor. The retailer confirms the information and enters the product name and the amount, and it's the retailer maintains that log for 2 years as a logbook doesn't purchase don't apply for amounts under 60 milligrams of a product. Inserts the 18-year-old restriction. We certainly discussed that point, but that's the standard that this we're offering this amendment for those items that are by this legislation deemed behind the counter products. Inserts the seller, retail, and the vendor liability section that was in the version of the House bill, House version. And it's it also has the same hold harmless provisions for the seller, retail, and vendor. Also, it was in the House version by the sponsor of the bill right there. Yes, sir.
So the logbooks dovetail with the federal law. consumer consistency between federal and state laws, really, and then the 18-year-old thing, which I think we have an amendment on that. Any other discussion on the amendment? Representative Crawford.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move an amendment to the amendment.
You have that label here under number 3. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
Up as an amendment to the amendment, it just happens to be labeled number 3 in our lineup here.
And what that does is delete lines 15 through 17, which prohibits people under 18 years of age from buying a legal product. I think that with the safeguards that we put in place with this bill, that if used correctly, I believe that these are useful products and should be allowed to, for people that, I mean, under the federal guidelines, they require people to have a picture ID. So,
why don't you just go ahead and move the amendment? I'll object, and then we can have that discussion.
Amendment to the amendment. I'm sorry. Move the amendment. I thought I'd.
Amendment to the amendment.
The amendment. I will object and just continue on. Just to make sure we're technically correct.
Anyway, it would, the federal guidelines require that you can't buy these products without a picture ID. Federal guidelines allow people under 18 years of age to buy these. With the requirements, with these being put behind the counter and with the log books and that sort of thing, I think that we should be able to allow kids that have driver's licenses to buy these products. It's a legal product, and I think that our retailers would appreciate that.
Senator Bundy.
Sitting in this chair, I feel representatively. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for Representative Stoltz about why that was included if it was not required by the Federal Patriot Act.
Mr. Chairman, discussions I had with folks back home and with their colleagues, one of the problems with this whole meth problem is the smurfing. And if I was, and we got to the common, it's dangerous to call something a common sense conclusion, but that's how, a conclusion that I came to was that put an extra onus on the merchants and trying to control this, but when we weren't, the folks that we have a lot of problems with on the smurfing are underage, often runaways, emancipated minors, not always in the best circumstances. We're trying to solve the meth problem, and there's going to be some inconvenience, and that's something it's a value judgment that I had on exercising this. I know that there's going to be some unfair ramifications that, frankly, if I was a merchant, I would probably set an arbitrary deadline just to avoid the controversy myself. And I know merchants in my community on tobacco, some of them have arbitrarily said they don't want some under 21 to avoid problems. But so it's that's the genesis and the development of it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I had an opportunity to attend some seminars on the meth problem and the smurfing, the people who buy the ingredients for manufacturing meth can certainly involve young people. 18 is a age of near majority, and obviously I'd hate to see some GI being told he couldn't buy Sudafed. I'm wondering if the same purpose could be served with a younger prohibition. 16, 14, something where people are maybe not as adult to be able to resist the pressures that a drug manufacturer might put on them.
Representative, was this in the original methamphetamine bill, written like this?
Chairman, I've been through so many iterations, I'm trying to remember.
You mind if I ask the sponsor, Representative Crawford?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe it was in the House bill. We didn't have it in the House bill as it went over, but I believe it came back from the Senate with the prohibition in it. So it's in one, it isn't in the other.
If I remember.
Senator Seekins.
If I remember correctly, Mr. Co-Chairman, we had an 18-year-old prohibition with several exceptions, such as a 17-year-old wife of a military member or an emancipated minor that could prove that they were truly emancipated. But I think those were the two exceptions.
Mr. Chairman, the senator from Fairbank, Senator Seekins, has jarred my memory now, and that was looking at the Senate version with the requirement. That's where looking through it. I thought it, looking at the Senate version with the 18 requirement with the exceptions, and I was looking at it from the merchant's point of view, there's an 18 age requirement, and that's how I got to the conclusion that I spoke about briefly. It wasn't from the House version. It was from looking at the Senate language using 18 at the standard, and I thought the exemptions were problematic, and most merchants would probably be arbitrary and operate under a safeguard of not selling anybody under 18 with the difficulty of proving marital status or emancipation. It's a purpose of buying it. I asked questions that there was paperwork routinely carried around, and would a merent rather not deal it was certainly something that there I certainly had a lot of soul searching on what the right way to do it is. I like less government, some things, but this is obviously a lot of government in throughout this whole thing that
one of the reasons why I was stirred on the exceptions from the Senate bill was the emancipated minor and the exception for a military dependent under 18. And so those were problematic to me. I hadn't really thought necessarily about taking it out to get altogether, but my thinking was, if you're going to ask for clerks to do the math or to try to distinguish between one youngster and another, I could see that was a problem. I kind of like the idea of having an ID check anyway, so this would bring that. So let me continue the debate with Representative Senator, Co-Chairman Seekins, and then we'll get back to you, Representative.
If you look on page 16 of the Senate version, starting with line 26, that paragraph, that subparagraph said, a retailer, employer, or agent of a retailer may not sell, deliver, dispense, distribute, or any manner furnish a product or substance containing or the salts to a person who is under 18 years of age unless the person is an emancipated minor or a member of the military. And that was the version that we approved in the Senate. So, that's where the 18-year-old prohibition came in. Just so that you know the history of how that progressed. And I think that may have been in the governor's original version, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure, but we combined three versions of the bill on the Senate side, so I'm not sure exactly where it came prior to that.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I was just thinking that you know the federal law allows people under 18, as long as they have a legal picture ID, to buy this. I mean, it seems to me that we could make a compromise and. Allow this product to be legally used I'm not wedded to any absolute or particular number, but I do think that people that, I mean, wives, mothers, and all that need to buy these drugs for their kids, 16's okay with me.
And I think the age of the ability to get emancipation is 16, if I understand correctly, through court order. Senator French.
That was going to be my point, Mr. Chairman. I mean, aren't most wives and mothers emancipated? It's hard for me to imagine a situation where you're not.
At that point, I think it would take care of the military members as well, because you had to be 18, or I think within 9 months of 18, in order to accept induction into the military, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator, co-chairman.
Yeah, there's nothing on an ID that shows that a person's married. There is to show that what their age is. So I think we should, whatever we do, we should tie it into an age and go from there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford may have a solution.
Representative Crawford.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to withdraw the amendment to the amendment and put a conceptual amendment to the amendment in with the age at 16.
Okay, amendment number that was numbered 3, that was the amendment. The amendment number 1 has been withdrawn, so we can park that one. And then the conceptual amendment would be on page 1, line 16 of the amendment, to change 18 to 16, if I understand correctly. Is that correct, Representative Crawford?
Yes.
On page 1, line 16, we have the number 18.
15 and 16.
Yep.
I think it's 15 through 17.
Orders. 15, lines 15 and 16.
Okay. You are correct, 15 and 16. So in both places on page 1, line 15 and 16, change the number 18 to 16.
Yes, sir.
Objection to that?
No.
Seeing no objection, then. Okay, for purpose of the discussion, Representative Stoltz.
For the purpose of discussion, I'm hopeful that the merchants will, I believe they will still have the discretion of determining who they'll sell it to, and much like merchants selling tobacco or other products that are also legal. So there are certainly some areas that are in higher volumes where this activity occurs, and they want to be a responsible part of the solution. I don't want to tie their hands from, and it's my understanding that this doesn't prevent them from instituting a policy of a higher age.
I think any retailer has a right to not sell a product, I think. If you offer service to all those...
Mr. Chairman, I just remind us of the sign we all see. We have the right to refuse service. And
that'll remove my objection.
The objection has been removed. That brings back amendment number 1, which is the logbooks conforming with federal law. Is there any other discussion on amendment number 1?
Question.
Representative Crawford.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move an amendment to the amendment, and it's listed as amendment number 4.
And speak to your amendment. I'll object so that I can hear what this is you're trying to do.
Mr. Chairman, as we sent the original bill over, iodine is one of the precursors to making methamphetamine, and there's hardly any other product that they, I mean, use for it in the quantities that they seem to buy it in. It was suggested, and it was in the law that we originally crafted this from Oklahoma, that they track and keep iodine behind the counter and keep logbooks on it, just like they do the pseudoephedrine. And I think it's a good thing to also limit the public's access to iodine.
Was this in either one of the bills, Representative? the iodine. I think it might have been...
It was in the House version.
Double-check, so can you give us the page where that was in the House?
It's on page 16 of the... I'm sorry. Yeah, page 16 of the Senate bill, line 9. Page 16,
French, line 9. 16, line 9, according to Senator French. Okay.
And if I may continue, the reason we have to address this is because the first part of Amendment Number 1 deletes this entire section. That is, Amendment Number 1 would delete the page 16. The first line of Amendment Number 1 says page 15, line 31 through page 17, line 26 is all deleted.
Oh.
So unless we put this back in, it stays deleted.
Yeah, but we didn't pass Amendment Number 1.
Well, we're
it's in the bill, you see.
For amendment to Amendment Number 1 at this point. Senator Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chairman, thank you. If I look at this, we're now requiring a logbook requirement here for iodine, the same as we would for pseudoephrine products. And while I would tell you that I buy iodine in the gallon jar for veterinary purposes. It's a very common substance to be used in veterinary medicine. You'll find it on most farms, and anybody that has livestock or horses will probably have. We used it twice in the last month, just when two foals were born, to dip their umbilical cord in iodine. I mean, it's a fairly common thing. We use it for hoof problems, for thrush, for infections of all kinds on horses and cows and pigs and other animals. And you know, while I understand what we're trying to get to, I don't know that we're going to accomplish anything by having a farmer who gets his iodine supply from veterinary supply store in Ohio having to go through a logbook process, because most of the iodine that we do buy in veterinary quantities comes from outside on mail order. I'm not sure that I want to go to the logbook. I don't have any problem with it being some kind of an ID being shown, but I'm not necessarily in favor of a logbook in order to obtain iodine when it's used. So it's not used that much on kids anymore, but it sure is on animals.
Any other discussion? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree that it's not used very much in the general public anymore, other than for the purpose that we're trying to make illegal here. We still want people to be able to buy the substance as long as it's used properly. And I think that when you buy it by the gallon for veterinary purposes, that logbook, you know, this was originally in House Bill 149, and I think it's a good way to limit the amount of methamphetamine that is manufactured out in the general public. And I understand that what we're doing here is going to be an inconvenience to folks, but the reason why we're doing it is because it's such a scourge throughout the state. Getting worse, so I'd really like to see this.
Just a question, Representative. Then it would be my understanding and your understanding that if a retailer sold both of them, they would use the single logbook for both, or
that was how we had it envisioned.
Discussion.
Maybe just ask a question.
French,
is the group concerned about the restriction of the sale, or is the group concerned about the logbook? You know, is it possible to
reach consensus on either one of those points? That is it both, or is it one or the other?
Senator Seekins?
Yeah, but thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm saying if we have restricted the sale of Sudafrin base, without that, iodine has no other use except for medical purposes. I'm wondering if we are going to look at the restriction of all things, I guess we need to start restricting who can buy propane. And I'm just not sure that it's adding to the equation to any great degree. So, just in my opinion.
What are the other ingredients that are absolutely necessary that we have not included in the logbook formulation? Do you know, Representative Crawford?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to trusty aide to.
I'd have to do too.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Well, for one, not that I've cooked any lately, but I understand there's red phosphorus, but that's not something you're going to find on the drugstore counter. And we're certainly not going to find gallon jugs on the drugstore counter. So restricted access for iodine in the general retail area seems, many little bottles, I mean, I haven't seen in years a bottle of iodine, seems like it's probably not necessary.
Senator, I tend to agree with you. The restricted access is not as big a deal to me. It would be, I personally wouldn't have any problem if the farmer's supply store had to have a logbook as you logged out gallons at a time. There could be a good cross-reference possibility for those who are not farmers buying gallons of iodine, I suppose. But as far as the restriction of the thimbleful of iodine at any retail store, I don't know that having that behind the counter or restricted buying is going to be something that I would necessarily vote for. So is there language that you had thought about beyond that, Representative Crawford?
Mr. Chairman, no, I hadn't thought about how we might. I don't think it takes large amounts of iodine to cook up a thing of meth, but I don't, you know, not ever having done that, I'm not real familiar with it.
Yes. The other comment, I would speak against the amendment at this point because of that, but if there's some verbiage that came up with logbooks only, we might be able to get this in, especially since we are requiring the federal level look at when you're purchasing things. Senator Bundy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this has been an ongoing process. You know, initially, the attempt to limit access to pseudoephedrine was put it into bubble packs. They said they wouldn't bother with that. Well, they turned out they did bother with it, and there are also commercial wholesale levels that folks are attempting to access. But I would suggest that if we choose not to adopt this amendment, this is a living document, and if this is something we have to come back and revisit in a year or two because iodine has become a problem, we can certainly do that. I doubt we will have plugged all the loopholes with this one bill, and we will likely be back because, as I understand it, the commercial threat is even greater than these moms and pops.
The discussion on amendment to amendment number one. Representative Crawford, any last comments?
Along with the will of the committee here, I felt like it was the right thing to do. That's why I brought it forward.
Couldn't ask you to do anything less. So I'll maintain the objection to the amendment, and we just call the roll.
Representative Crawford.
Yes.
Coghill?
No.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Seekins?
No.
That brings us back to amendment number one, which has been slightly amended. Any further discussion on amendment number one? Do I hear any objection to amendment number one? Okay, well, amendment number one as amended. That brings us to the amendment that is numbered amendment number five.
Number two is not necessary.
Number two was... Did I mess up here?
It's number two.
Oops. I did. I set it aside. I'm sorry. My apology. Sorry to get back on record here. We amended number one with the others, and I set number two aside. So we have number two, Representative Stoltz.
Chairman, I move amendment number two, and for the record, 24-LS0596/DA.11, Cook Luckopt 324, 2006.
DA.11. I'll object so that we can go ahead and talk about it.
Chairman, like all sunsets, this has a lot more verbiage than the simplicity it tries to accomplish, as you know, the sunset language as it exists in our statutes, but this really provides a sunset, and I view it just a minimal revisitation date of this issue in the logbooks. I suspect we're going to be back at the table before then.
Any other discussion on amendment number two? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This logbooks are part of the federal requirement. It would seem that if we sunset this, we're going to be out of compliance with the federal requirements, and I don't exactly understand why we would do that.
I think Senator French.
Did we establish that the federal law does not sunset the logbooks? Is that generally, we're all agreed on that point? Is that, is there any dispute about that point? Federal law doesn't sunset it?
I cannot speak definitively on that. I'd have to defer to Representative Stoltz's staff is the one that did most of the research on the federal law.
Chairman, I don't believe it does, and this was a Senate provision. We're trying to work together. Not a particularly important provision to me, quite frankly, but it was a mechanism that would force us to revisit the issue, and trying to mesh the two different bills. The Senate version did have the sunset, is my recollection, and I like the concept of forcing this issue back before the legislature, and as I said, probably before 3 years, but it's not a hard and fast for me.
Co-chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chairman. We did sunset the provision because in our discussions in the Judiciary Committee, we at one time in the Judiciary Committee substitute, we sunset it because we had a question as to the value of the logbooks and whether the information that would be obtained would be useful or would be used in any manner to be able to try to stop the production of product. And basically what we did was we said we would sunset it to review it at a later date to be able to see if it was being used properly. And at this point, because of the federal requirements, which I don't think have a sunset on them, if I remember correctly, I think we would, I don't think there'd be an objection on my part to remove or not to re-include the sunset provisions.
Chairman, if you don't have it, frankly, it sounds like we are going to revisit this issue anyway. I generally like sunsets, but I don't want to cloud this issue. If you don't, on the House side, if you don't have objection, I'd remove my amendment.
The only reason I was going to speak to it is just because of the iodine issue. It might push the issue up further, but I have a feeling we're going to revisit that anyway. So,
Chairman, and again, the sunset, and I thought about an earlier date, but it was really to force the issue, and we're going to be dealing with this as you and Senator Bundy and others have said. This is going to be a continually evolving as the criminals and the crooks and the creeps get more smart and adapt, then we're going to have to adapt.
So you don't want to withdraw the amendment?
Yes, I did. I would.
We'll withdraw the amendment. Maybe we can talk the other amendments into being withdrawn.
I don't think it'll take very long, Mr. Chairman.
Right, so that brings us to the amendment, numbered amendment number five.
Catch up here.
Senator French, I believe, correct?
Sure, my colleague here is ready. I'll move amendment number 5, and for the record, it's backslash DA.12, DA.12.
I'll object so that we can discuss this.
The function of this amendment, Mr. Chairman and other members of the committee, would be to take out from the bill in front of us the finding section of the marijuana portion of the bill. You'll see it deletes basically 3.5 pages of text. The reason I'm proposing the amendment is because I sat through numerous hearings on this subject, along with the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Seekins. We sat through numerous hearings on the subject, and I literally read hundreds of pages of documents on this topic. I became convinced that the science that was being laid out, if you will, in the findings was not reliable. We heard from state, national, and international experts who refuted the findings line by line, with one possible exception. I'm accustomed to working in court. I would say these findings were not proved beyond a reasonable doubt, far less so. And so I feel that they should not become law. The science should be in the laboratory and not in the statute book.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I speak in opposition to the amendment with all due respect to a much like beauties in the beholder, as we listen to these discussions, the validity of the information appears to be in the beholder. I thought those who spoke against the findings were coming not from a scientific basis, but from an advocacy basis. And so one of the purposes of the findings is that there's going to be undoubtedly court challenges, and I think the findings are essential to advancing at least what I view as the proper case in the courts.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We normally I have a history in Judiciary Committee, and our members do, of removing findings from a bill and putting a letter of intent along with the bill to do so. In this case, the majority of the members felt that the findings section was important to be able to describe the reason for the action and what our findings were. So I also would speak against the amendment in order to preserve this language in a very clear manner in the statute rather than by attaching a letter.
Comment on amendment number 5. I'll maintain my objection. Ready for the vote? Let's call the roll.
Representative Crawford?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Cotto?
No.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator Seekins?
No.
Number 5 fails. That brings us to amendment number 6. And this is also Senator French, I think it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move amendment number 6, and for clarity, the purposes of clarity, this is amendment that has the backslash DA.13, DA.13 up in the upper right-hand corner.
And I'll object so that we can hear this thing. And
the amendment number 6 would delete from the methawana bill, would turn it back into a meth bill with steroids portion attached. The reason I'm proposing this is that I've heard from many, many of my constituents who have said that the two bills should be treated separately. I think combining them into one bill has confused the public. They think that we are equating the horrors of meth with the lesser but no less substantial, still significant problems that the marijuana poses. So that's the idea. That's point number one. Point number two is that your body has not had the opportunity to study and analyze and debate the marijuana issue. I'd hate to deprive them of that opportunity, Mr. Chairman. And I guess more seriously, if you believe that the bill needs the greatest amount of strength to withstand a court challenge, I think it would be stronger if it were presented to more committees and had a full hearings in both bodies.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also be in favor of this amendment because of the fact that this is, in effect, pulling a bill out of committee on our body's side, and seems to be against our custom, and I think that they should be separated.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I speak against the amendment. This is, everything we do in the legislative process is somewhat of a compromise, and I think this compromise involves two illegal drugs, and I've said many times I'm not in favor of having any more impaired people functioning in society, whether they're high on meth or stoned on pot. It's the same to me. I've heard from a number of people who want it separated, but they're marijuana advocates. Understand their plea, but I don't accept it.
Call the question, Mr. Chairman.
Question's been called. Any further? All right. Let's take the vote.
Representative Stoltz.
No.
Representative Cogdell.
No.
Representative Crawford.
Yes.
Senator Bundy.
No.
Senator Sagan.
No.
Senator Fritsch.
Yes. Oh, amendment number 6 does not want to pass it. That brings us to the last one. I think, at least the last one I've got numbered here. That would be DA-17, which is numbered differently than the one I have. Senator French, is this yours?
Yes. 17 is correct.
Oh, okay.
I scratched this out.
Oh, okay.
DA-17, I believe, is the correct number. Is that what
your
staff has confirmed? We had a last-minute change for one word.
That will be called amendment number 7. So, Senator French?
I will move amendment number 7, and for clarity purposes, it's in the upper right-hand corner, DA.17, DA-17.
Object.
The thrust of this amendment is to... in essence, decriminalize the in-home personal usage of small amounts of marijuana, and I really do so, Mr. Chairman, under the primary and fundamental reason of privacy. Our state constitution guarantees the right of personal privacy. Section 22 of our state constitution, which we've all sworn to uphold, says that the right of the people to privacy is recognized and shall not be infringed. I think most Alaskans believe that their home is their castle and their right. It's one of the foundational elements of our society. I think we have to be very cautious about the reasons that we give the police to enter a home with a search warrant. I want to emphasize this pertains to personal, in-home use of small amounts of marijuana. As a state prosecutor, I have prosecuted cases of marijuana possession in cars and highways. I'd be happy to continue to do so. But this is not that. That would remain illegal under the law if we were to adopt this amendment. This is again is about privacy, about in-home use of small amounts of marijuana, and so that's the basis of the amendment.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Again, all due respect, I speak in opposition to the amendment. In my mind, this is just a little bit pregnant amendment. Would we? Suggest that because of privacy, people should have small amounts of cocaine or methamphetamines in their homes? I don't think so. Marijuana is an illegal drug. It's federally classified as an illegal drug. And the notion that if you just have a little bit of it is illogical to me. That means it's still illegal whether you have an ounce or a pound. And I think our colleague Senator Dyson said something this morning about us sending set standards about what we think society should be like. And I said it before, I'm in favor of having fewer impaired people in society rather than more. By suggesting that under the guise of privacy we can use illegal drugs, that the state tacitly supports drug use, and I would, and at least that's my view of. And I would oppose the amendment.
Other discussion? That's the two sides of the question. So,
call the question.
Let's call the question then.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Coghill?
No.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
No.
Senator
no.
All That's all the amendments that I had before me at this point.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I take a short of these here?
Take a brief of these. Order. Question is coming up about severability, and we have Mr. Guinelli here from the Department of Law. The question of severability has come up. Senator Cochair, you want
yes,
to restate that
yes.
question?
Thank you, Mr. Cochair. The Mr. Guinelli, the question came up as to severability of sections of this bill once it goes into statute. I wonder if you might address that for the record.
Thank you, certainly, Senator Seekins. For the record, Dean Guinelli, Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Actually, earlier in the session, there were those kind of questions had arisen about this bill. There was some confusion generated by some of the opponents. There was some confusion generated by some of the opponents of the bill regarding severability. There is actually a statute in existing law in Title I. I don't have it right in front of me, but it specifically addresses severability of bills, and it says something to the effect that all bills are to be interpreted as though they had a provision that specifically addresses severability, that they are severable. That is, unless the legislature wants to make them not severable, and there, you know, in some bills in the past that has been the case. But if the bill is silent about it, then all of the provisions are specifically severable.
Thank you, Mr. Guinelli.
Mr. Co-Chairman, for the record, if I could, that's Section 110.030, severability. Any law heretofore or hereafter enacted by the Alaska Legislature which lacks a severability clause should be construed as though it contained the clause in the following language, quote, if any provision of this act or the application thereof to any person or circumstance is held invalid, the remainder of this act and the application to other persons or circumstances shall not be affected thereby, end quote.
All right. That answers that question. Thank you. Any other amendments before the committee on the Mr. Co-Chairman Seekins?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we forward the bill for consideration by our ratification by our individual bodies, the Senate CS for House Bill Number 149, Finance, amended Senate Court Rule as amended today to our bodies for ratification.
Conference committee report.
As a conference committee report
with limited free conference powers.
And the individual recommendations.
Yeah right.
And there are attached fiscal notes.
Yes. Fiscal notes are the same ones that we had.
So the motion has been made to move the amended conference committee report to the bodies. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so moved. Don't forget to sign the report. This committee is closed.